have to be what?
Twice.
What?
Twice as good.
Twice as good as them to get half of what they have.
Hello, hello, hello. DK usually does this cold opening, so you might be like, where is DK? DK has a lot of work stuff going on this week, so it'll just be your deep voice valley girl, MJ Craig. Coming 2 days late because I too had a very chaotic week at work, and I'm coming to you from Little Rock, Arkansas. So, hello, welcome, listeners, lovers, and friends. So excited to have you joining us for another week of the Twice as Good podcast. And this week, I was going to keep it short and just talk about a couple things. And then I realized that so much has been going on in the world. And, you know, we can't let another week go by without talking about it. So first, I would say as your Rebro queen, I wanted to talk about what's going on in Georgia. In Georgia right now, there is a young woman who, in February, went to the hospital, I believe complaining of a headache, ended up having an aneurysm, and I believe, unfortunately, technically, passed away. They found out, in the midst of everything and her treatment, that she was 9 weeks pregnant at the time. Because of Georgia's abortion laws, this woman is still being kept alive on life support because of the fetus. The doctors have been very blunt in saying that there is a very high chance that this fetus is born with fetal abnormalities, has difficulty functioning, is disabled, that their brain isn't fully developed. Because when someone is brain dead, they can no longer regulate their temperature. They can no longer regulate their hormones. So the hospital is having to do all of this for her because this woman is medically dead. It's just, I mean, you can't, humans are not meant to be, like, she's not an incubator. That's just not how the human body works. The attorney general is saying that it's actually not clear in Georgia law as to whether she should be kept alive. So it's this weird case of the hospital doesn't want to lose doctors or be in a position to get sued or have people go to jail. And the family has no choice in the matter. It reminds me of Terry Schiavo. That was a case in the 2000s. Where a woman was in a coma and was pregnant, and the family decided to keep her alive in order to continue the pregnancy. And I think morally, I understand how this could be difficult. I think for the family, they themselves have said, we don't know what decision we would make here. We're just not even being given the chance to make a decision. I think legally and scientifically, this is a fetus. This fetus at this stage, this sounds really terrible to say, but it's a parasite. It literally cannot live without the host. The host is dead. Keeping this woman alive, like this is an episode of The Handmaid's Tale, in order for her to grow a fetus that, what, like might not even be okay? It just doesn't make any sense. The family isn't for it. Also, who's paying all these medical bills? Is the hospital going to pay these bills, or are they going to stick them on the family that has no choice in the matter? And it's just sad to think that this is how quickly this is where the U.S. has gotten to when it comes to reproduction and reproductive rights and reproductive care, that we have gone past protecting. I mean, we've been past pro-life and pro-choice. I've always said it's pro-choice and anti-choice. There's no pro-life in this conversation. But we have gotten to a point of it's not even about the... You can't say that this is about the fetus. Because the fetus's chance of having a good quality of life are very slim.
this is literally treating a human being as if they don't matter. And the idea that the human body can just become a host for another person, well, not even a person, because again, this fetus literally, like, you cannot remove this fetus from this woman. It would die. Antonin Scalia, I remember, did a 60 Minutes interview. Obviously, he's been dead for a minute, so this was a while ago. And they asked him about Roe v. Wade and his opinion on Roe v. Wade. Antonin Scalia is a very devout Catholic. And his opinion was that Roe v. Wade is not about the morality of abortion. It's about personhood. And the Constitution is very clear on what personhood is, as are the philosophers who our Constitution is derived from, Locke, Hobbes, Rousseau. And personhood includes breathing, includes life. And a fetus, if it cannot survive without the mother, the woman, the person, it's not a person, and therefore doesn't have any rights under our Constitution. So he says it's not about whether or not he personally would want someone in his family to have an abortion, or whether he personally thinks it's morally right or wrong. Just because Catholic doctrine says that life begins at conception, that's not what the U.S. Constitution says or implies. That's nowhere in there. Somehow our legal system has gotten to a place where people's personal religious principles and their personal decisions of what they would do or not do, because a lot of these people are hypocrites, for their family are law. Yet some of these same people are so concerned about being forced to follow either someone else's religion or the war on Christianity, or this person shouldn't be able to wear a mask or hijab. It's just all very hypocritical. I saw an article earlier this week about a woman complaining that her daughter was forced into a sexual education class in fifth grade, and how she thought it was ridiculous that the school would think it's appropriate to teach her child about her sex organs. And I think a lot of Americans don't realize when they say stuff like that, we sound just as regressed as some of the nations that we claim to be liberating. We sound just as regressed as some of the parts of the Middle East that we say women have no rights. I mean, that's the direction we're heading in when you have women who are medically dead being incubators for fetuses. So I think it is really tragic, and I wish that this wasn't happening. I wish that this wasn't a thing. And I feel so sorry for, her name is Adriana Smith. I feel so sorry for her family. She has other children. She has parents. And the fact that they're going through this, and the fact that this is, of course, they would want this to become a national news story so people can hear what's happening to their daughter. But then at the same time, it's also so tragic that we've gotten to a stage in abortion rights that the worst day of people's lives, right? Like, your daughter went to the hospital with a headache, and now you have to relive that every day because the hospital is worried about getting sued, and the state is claiming that a fetus that they're not going to help take care of, they don't care about, this is Georgia, they don't care about Black lives, is more important than burying your own child. So we will keep folks updated on what is going on there. But yeah, it's just another day in the neighborhood. And with that, we are going to turn to our episode of The West Wing for this week. This week, we are discussing one of my favorite episodes of The West Wing, season 1, episode 2, Post Hoc, ergo Proctor Hoc. It is one of my favorite episodes. And in said episode, the big thing is that the reason why the name is in line. So, post hoc ergo propter hoc. I wanted to choose this episode this week because I think the Democratic Party is living in a post hoc ergo propter hoc era. And I know so many of our party people are West Wing fans. In this episode, the name, well, one, CJ, who is one of my favorite characters and obviously the inspiration for my name, has to diffuse a situation between the president and the vice president concerning the VP's quotes about a bill. Throughout the series, you will see that these two people, the president and the vice president, have a lot of tension for a lot of different reasons. One, that they had run against each other in the primary and then come together. Before he becomes president, Bartlet lets the VP know about his condition, which pisses the VP off because it's like, if people had known about your condition, I probably would have been president. So there's that. And then they also, obviously, President Bartlet is from New Hampshire. He's from the North. He's a very hoity-toity economist, all those things. And the VP is from the South. So as they are talking through what is going on with the VP, and how they got to what the VP statement was, CJ brings up that the president will sometimes say things that are flippant, even if he doesn't mean them to be. And it leads, and how that led to them losing Texas because of a joke he made. So the president asked everyone in the room if they know the expression post hoc, ergo propter hoc, of which, in a room of a bunch of lawyers, none of them could figure out the full phrase. But basically it means after, therefore, because of before. And his point is that we didn't lose Texas because I made that statement. Like, there's the correlation is not the causation. And I think right now in the Democratic Party, one, we are still talking about 2024, and we are 5 months into 2025, almost six. And we, in the past 3 months, 6 months, have lost a couple members of the House. Rest in peace to Jerry Conley, who passed away last week. I actually got the chance to know him during the 24 cycle. And we lost a member from Arizona earlier in the year, and a member from Texas around the week of, I think that was the State of the Union. So we have lost a couple members, and there is this fight within the party of people needing to step down so younger members can be elected, and getting rid of this older generation of elected officials, and that they need to make space for the younger ones. I 100% agree that, like, our party in elected office does not necessarily reflect the voters anymore. Like, our party is skewing older on the elected official front. I also think that these folks' deaths are tragic. They are not the reason that we have been losing bills. Like, the idea that, oh, if there was a younger person there instead of Jerry Conley, we could have stopped this bill last week. No, we couldn't have, because we don't have the majority. So maybe Mike Johnson would have had to screw two people's hands a little bit more so they actually came back and voted. But all of these people that we're talking about are in safe blue seats. They will now be replaced with another Democrat, assumingly someone younger. Great. That doesn't change the fact that we do not have the majority. It doesn't change the fact we don't have the majority in the Senate. It doesn't change the fact that we don't have the White House. And this blame game, I mean, I saw so many people last week. This man died. Like, he fought cancer and he didn't win. And could you imagine being his family and you go online and people, he was one of the most effective members of Congress, if not the most effective member of the Democratic Party when it came to actually getting things passed and getting things done. And instead of people talking about your legacy or the work you've done, they're saying, oh, God, you died. If you would have just stepped down, we could have someone else there. Someone else to do what?
we don't have the majority. Like, we are losing the forest for the trees. Instead of trying to figure out which Republicans we can pick off over the next 18 months so we can take the House back, you're fighting over people being too old to be in seats that, at the end of the day, don't matter. Because we don't have the majority. We can't pass anything. We can't pass anything. And the only thing we can do is put pressure to get some of these Republicans to have to worry about whether or not they'll win re-election. So, and to post hoc ergo propter hoc, you are looking at what happened last week and saying, oh, this happened because these people are old. And if they would have stepped down, we would be in the situation. No, babe, we would still be here. It would just be a younger person whose vote at the end of the day doesn't matter because we don't have the majority. We have Jake Tapper and his co-author going out about this book. And I think I saw a quote where he said that the scandal of hiding Biden's health is worse than Watergate, which is like, what the fuck are we talking about? Worse than Watergate? Watergate? Watergate, where the Republican Party broke in to their opposing party's headquarters, stole medical records from a physician's office? That Watergate? Is this the same timeline of life where Ronald Reagan was basically incoherent for his second term in office during the AIDS crisis, during Nicaragua contraband, during all these things, and Republicans just ran the government with Nancy Reagan and her astrologer? Like, what is happening? Especially looking at America right now. I think for most of us, we would rather have a mumbling, kind of slow, mental decline President Biden than this guy, who tariffs are changing every day, they're banning people from countries, they're kicking out all of the foreign students and banning Harvard from having international students, potentially like ending America's science programs. And, like, our ability to be the leaders in the world in science and in discovery and economics. Most Nobel Prize winners study in the U.S., no matter what country they're from. And that might end because our president is a fucking idiot. But let's talk about whether or not Biden was all the way there at different points over the last 4 years. Because that's what really matters. Things that happened 18 months ago, him not recognizing George Clooney at a White House party is more important than talking about the fact that the Trump administration is literally picking up random people and shipping them off to foreign countries without any due process. Yes, let's talk about that. We have gotten to a point in this experiment called Life in America that Democrats have really just lost the forest for the trees and are no longer actually talking about the real issues or being bluntly honest about the real reason that we lost last year. You can blame Biden. You can blame Harris. At the end of the day, Biden, when it came to actual getting shit done, did a lot for labor. The CHIPS Act, the CHIPS and Science Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, like, he actually did a lot for labor. He did a lot to bring down price. He did a lot to try to make people's lives better. The media didn't want to report on it. The media didn't want to elaborate, right? Like, no one was reporting on the lowering of prescription drug prices. They're constantly reporting on how expensive everything is, on affordability, without being bluntly honest about the fact that a lot of the reason that things aren't affordable aren't because the government isn't doing everything they can to make things more affordable. It's that these companies don't give a fuck. Like, I will never say that murder is right. There's a reason that Luigi Mangione thought that the right thing to do was to assassinate the head of an insurance agency. It's wrong, but this is where we are. Because these CEOs and these company heads are greedy and care more about having more money than they do about the rest of us. 60% of people can't afford to live in America anymore. They can't afford their day-to-day necessities. That's not because the Biden administration didn't do everything they could to change that. Biden administration brought in more jobs, brought plants back to the U.S., brought down the price of insulin and 20 other majorly used prescription drugs. The media wasn't reporting on any of that. They're reporting on the price of eggs. Why are eggs expensive? Eggs are expensive, one, because the companies can make them expensive. There's no laws preventing them from price gouging us. Two, there was an avian bird flu going across the country. They weren't talking about that. They were just like, everything's so expensive. The cost of stuff is so expensive. Without being bluntly honest with people about why, our country is very uninformed. Then you go into the second fact of, with all of that, we also have a party that is very big tent. Great. Love that for us. In that big tent, you end up to a point where people think the extreme of either side represents the plurality of people within the party. Most Democrats aren't leftists. They are a part of the party, which are necessary because you need people to want to move things forward, and you need people who want to be slow and controlled and measured. You do. You need both. As a country as a whole, we also need both. But even within the party, I mean, if we were in another country where they had a multi-party system, these two parties wouldn't be together. In most countries, the party spectrum is basically the Democratic Party. The Republicans are considered like extremists that don't actually exist and enough to like gather votes to have seats in government. But when we look at how that makes people feel, one, you have a portion of voters who support the things that Democrats want to do. Like if you took the party piece away from it and just listed out things that Democrats have in their platform, whether it be affordability, college tuition, home ownership, lower taxes on the middle class, lower tax on the poor, more upward mobility, like all of those things that the Democratic Party talks about, people support those things. But once you put the labels on it, they do not want to be, they don't support them when associated with the party label. Is that partially because of this idea that like these are now leftist policies because they see like an AOC? Obviously you guys can't see this, but I'm literally throwing up air quotes. They see like an AOC or a Bernie and are like, oh, those people are too extreme. I don't support the things they support. Or is it also that a lot of it is that they don't actually believe us anymore? Because when we are in power, we aren't able to broadcast the things that we do well, like the prescription drug affordability. And then some of the bigger things that we talk about, we haven't done. We talked about this a couple episodes ago, but since LBJ, from LBJ to Obama, obviously under Obama, we have the Affordable Care Act, which I think still could be much better than it is. But we've had, where's the big idea? Where's the big thing to get people excited, to get people to vote for it, that encourages people to feel like there's something there that they are supporting and that we can actually do, that will actually get done? We tried to do it with student loans, and it's been repealed and pushback and all the things. We try to do it with healthcare, and healthcare costs are still so high because we tried to balance the fact that there are healthcare companies all over this country that employ hundreds of thousands of people with the fact that a lot of these companies are honestly price gouging people. I mean, I am trying to get dental insurance now that I have moved. You know, for most dental insurance, you can't use the insurance for a year because you have to pay into it first. First of all, why do I have to get separate dental insurance? Why isn't it just part of my regular health insurance? Are my teeth not part of my body? Just like I have to get separate vision insurance. Why do I have to get separate insurance for my eyes and my teeth as if they aren't part of the same fucking body as the rest of me? It doesn't make any sense. And then I have to pay into it for a while. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. But this is the country we live in. And the fact that this hasn't changed is, yes, because of lobbying. It's just because of all these things. But we also have politicians who, for many of them, are more worried about getting reelected than they are about doing what's right. Because at the end of the day, if politicians really wanted to change this, they could. They could change it at the federal level. They could change it at the state level. Even if they didn't want to pass a specific law, they could incentivize states to make the change through giving them any sort of type of money for doing it. That's basically what we've done with the Affordable Care Act. But make it make sense. That's why so many Americans don't have dental insurance, because it's separate, it's expensive, and you have to pay into it before you can use it. But not having dental insurance, like if you get an infection in your mouth, whether it's in your teeth, you need a root canal, you have a sore, it could lead to heart problems very quickly because of how our bloodstreams work in our bodies, right? Like you could have an infection in your eye, you could have glaucoma, but if I have to pay separately for vision insurance, it doesn't matter if it's $3 or $5 a month, it's still money. And then on top of that, I'm still paying for health insurance. It's just very, it's absolutely insane to me. Yeah, I think Democrats as a whole are living in this era where we're looking for so many reasons, like so many things to blame 2024 on. Like, oh, if we had younger candidates, then people would have voted. If we got rid of these old people, then we wouldn't be losing on these bills. If we had known that Biden wasn't all the way there, we would have picked another candidate. We probably still would have lost people. One, across the world, people were rejecting leaders. Emmanuel Macron in France is literally one of the few exceptions to that. And he still, while he won re-election, his party got slaughtered. We saw it in the UK, we saw it in Canada, we've seen all across the world. Most people who were in power a year ago, 2 years ago, after COVID, are gone. We ourselves did it after COVID. We got rid of Trump in the midst of COVID. So I don't think changing any of these things that people think were the reason that we lost would have actually changed anything. We also just need to move forward. Those things all happened. And I'm all for learning from one's mistakes in order to make things better. We're not learning anything because these things aren't mistakes. The mistakes we made are like the fact that our media sucks, and we need to be more blunt about that when we are talking to them, and we need to hit them more. I'm all for protecting journalism. Let's protect good journalism. Let's protect the journalism that is highlighting stories that are important, the stories that are undercover, like the hard-hitting journalism that brought Watergate forward. Protect that. Protect the 60 Minutes of the world that are doing these hard investigative stories, and when the Trump administration is trying to come down on them, people are literally quitting. Protect that journalism. All these news shows and all the shit on TV and on Instagram and on Twitter where these so-called journalists are more worried about getting likes and clicks by printing their story first than they are about actually telling the truth about what's happening in this country. Fuck those people. And I wish when some of these politicians would get on TV and sit on these people's shows, they would be blunt about saying that to them. You want to be a good journalist? How come you've never talked about the fact that we capped the price of insulin at $30? Because so many Americans were going around and having to ration their insulin through the month so they could also pay rent. Why aren't we talking about that? That's what we need more of. We also need more of people running for state and local office. I am all for people running for Congress. I've worked for many congressional officials. I think running for Congress is very important. I think they do a lot of stuff. It is also the case that your state and local elected officials control like 90% of your life. A lot of the stuff that the feds do is sending money down to the states, which the states then get to determine how it's used. And we've had in many of our states these same people in state and local government for forever. So people complain that things aren't changing. And it's like, yeah, because you've had the same mayor, the same city council, the same governor, the same state legislators for forever. So of course nothing's changing. Why would it? You haven't changed anything. So as we're getting into the midterms years, please run for state and local office. Be the change that you want to see. And hold these people accountable. Like, I got a tax bill from my state for $3,000. And I'm like, what the fuck for? What am I giving? You want $3,000 more from me? For what? I'm not seeing what it's going to. Roads are shit. The schools aren't that great. And this isn't coming from the county. It's coming from the state. So, like, what am I paying this extra money for? Is it because I don't have kids and I don't have a house? You're punishing me? It's just very frustrating. And I want people to look at the next 2 years and really, I guess, until Trump is potentially out of office if he doesn't have democracy, the next 4 years, and a chance for the party to not necessarily even like rebuild or restructure or blah, 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 but just be honest and fix the things in the party that need to be fixed. And it's not looking back at 2024 and nitpicking these random things like, oh, people are too old. People being too old, they're still getting elected. Who cares? Do you want young people to run for office and win? Fucking run young people in these Republican seats where we need to get rid of these Republicans. Old Democrats are not the enemy. Republicans are. We got to get on the same page, people. So stop worrying about getting rid of Nancy Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and start worrying about getting rid of Mike Johnson. Start worrying about getting rid of Jim What's-His-Face in Ohio. Get rid of Kevin McCarthy. Get rid of these people who are literally ruining the lives of everyday Americans, people you care so much about. I don't care about whether or not Nancy Pelosi's there. I don't care whether or not Steny's there or Clyburn or any of these other people, because right now we don't have any power. Get rid of these Republicans who are ruining our lives on a day-to-day basis. I think they said they have 36 of them. Get rid of those 36. Get rid of these governors. Get rid of these crap-ass Republican mayors. Get rid of these Republicans. That's what we all need to be focusing on. Get rid of these people. Get them out of office. Run a good Democrat. Run a good independent. I don't care. Run somebody who can beat this person so we can get rid of these policies and actually start changing some shit. Y'all are worried about the wrong things. I don't care whether or not Nancy Pelosi's still in office. That seat's like a D plus 45. Who gives a shit? Whether it's her or another person, if it wasn't Jerry Conway last week, somebody could have caught the flu and not been able to come in. COVID's picking back up. There's all types of reasons that somebody could have missed a vote. Them being old or passing away, in his case, is not a reason to be like, oh, see, this is the problem. The problem is that his vote had to matter anyway, and we still would have lost. So that's my little rant for today on Post Hoc Ergo Proctor Hoc. And season 1, episode 2 of The West Wing is that y'all are losing the forest for the trees and are caring about shit that doesn't actually matter, because look at what is happening in this country. Who cares if these people are old? Who cares if they're dying? Our actual issue is Republicans. And I need all of us to get back on strategy, get back on game, and remember the real fight here. So we will see what happens over the next 18 months, but it's looking rough. I mean, I saw a study this week about Democrats need to bring straight white men back into the fold, and we do, but I don't think we need to like specially target not even only straight white men, but straight men. Have you considered just having men talk to men, just like we have women talk to women? Or, I don't know, going places where you find straight men. I just don't think this has to be that complicated. I don't think we need a project or a program for this. This isn't, I mean, I don't understand why last year we didn't have Tim Walz at a bunch of football games in the fall. I think our party, I don't think it's that straight men don't agree with Democratic Party principles. I think they look at our party and feel as though we don't want them there. And I don't think this is true of all straight men. I don't think it's true of all men. I think when you look at a party that, how do I say this? I think our party is very big tent, and I think there is a strain of the party. And I don't think these people represent all of the party, but their voices are the loudest that beat on straight men being the problem, that men are the problem, and that men are the reason that we got to the place where we are. I don't think that's true. I think that, like, leaders are the reason that we got to the place we are, many of them being men. I'm trying not to sound like a pick-me because I'm not one. But when the leading voices of your party, and I don't think this is like a leading voices like a Hakeem or Steny or Nancy or Kamala. I don't think it's those folks. I'm talking about on the like social media, like influencer side. You know, like I've been on campaigns where every phone call you're on, it's white women leading the phone call. And that is no shade, no tea to white women. But if you're on, that campaign or you're on that meeting, you do start to feel as though there is like a certain strain of feminism that is leading the party, and it's not inclusive of minority women, and it's not inclusive of straight men. And it feels like if that's not what you're on board with, you gotta go. The amount of Taylor Swift merch that they had on that fucking campaign last year, I was like, what are we doing? You know, it's a very specific strain of people who like Taylor Swift. The rest of us could care less. And I think when we get to a point where our merch, our energy, our social media leans a very specific way, it feels as though the rest of us are just part of the tent, but we're not part of the culture of the party. And I think that is actually where a lot of these men are. Where, like, at the end of the day, we only got, 29% of white men? I don't, that's its own thing. And we got, 80 in the 80s for black men, in the 60s or 50s for Latino men. I don't even know where Asian men were for last election cycle. But I don't think it's as simple as straight men don't identify with the party. Who doesn't like their costs being lower? Who doesn't want to be able to put more food on the table? They do identify with a lot of the things that our party says that they're for. I don't think they identify with the culture of the party anymore. And I think the culture of the Republican Party, not the some of it's the Donald Trumpiest, but the culture of the Republican Party, I think, has found a way to catch some of these men because it feels more inclusive to them than some of the cultural spaces of the Democratic Party. And I think that is what needs to change. It's not the messaging. It's not the ideology. We don't need to retarget men. That's not the problem. It's that when they look at the Democratic Party and they look at the culture of the party, it seems like they're not wanted. Do I think they need to be up front and center? Hell no. But I do think when you see what happened with David Hogg, who I thought needed to get the fuck up out of there, you should not be at the DNC if you want to primary other Democrats. Because in 2016, when the DNC seemed to put their thumb on the scale, everyone had a problem with it. So why would you think this is a place to do that? But anyway, his thing was we need to let straight men back to the party. They can't feel like they have to be perfect. It's not about straight men feeling like they need to be perfect or not be perfect. It is about this idea that you have a David Hogg who shouldn't, if that was his plan from jump or that's what he wanted to do, never should have been in that position in the first place. He never should have been elected. And then you have a Malcolm Kenyatta who gets caught up in that situation, but wants to actually do the work. So now you have two people, one of them is a straight white male, one of them is a young LGBT or young gay black man. And they are caught up in this situation. One of them is getting the spotlight more than the other because David Hogg was on every fucking show talking about this. And then he comes away saying the party needs to get back men. The party needs to get back men. The party needs to bring back men. You are not the example of the party needing to bring back men, sir, because you wanted to use the party to do something for your own purposes. Okay, cool. You're not the first grifter that's come on through. But you are part of the cultural problem. You're not part of the cultural solution. We don't need people like you at the front of the party who, at the end of the day, you say that you want to run all these young people. How come when people kept asking you if you're going to target CBC members, you couldn't say yes or no? When the actual base of the party, as we all know, is black people, and specifically black women. We need a cultural reset for the Democratic Party. And between the cultural reset and getting out of this post-hoc, ergo, propter-hoc mentality, I hope that we can move in the right direction. and start thinking forward instead of thinking backward about what the next 4, 8, 10 years is going to look like. Because we're fucked. Like, we just did redistricting. So these 35, 36 seats, unless there are, like, major ideological shifts in the country, that's really the only playing ground we got. And we need to win back some of these state houses. We need to flip some of these places where we can and really hit the ground running and come up with a real strategy to be better. Or in 2030, and maybe do another census in 20, and they get the results and do redistricting in 2032, we're going to be in the same fucking place. Where they're going to be cutting us out of seats, making us run against each other, and shit's going to be whack. So that is what I hope for us. And, you know, crossing fingers that we get there. But let's move on to the stuff we're going to do on this week in history. Because I'm going to talk about a specific historic event. So it was about this time, 5 years ago, that George Floyd was murdered. At the time, I was working on a race in Minnesota. He was murdered about 3 miles from where I lived. And, you know, we're in the midst of COVID. And everyone is itching to get outside. We saw global protests for racial justice. And my uncle called me, and he's in Ghana. And he was like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, I haven't left my apartment in like 3 weeks. I stayed in my apartment complex because the governor, when the protest started and people started lighting up police stations and cars and lighting up streets and row homes and started acting fucking nuts, the governor of Minnesota, Governor Tim Walz, put out a statement saying that the people who were doing this were from out of town and it was not the local residents, which was true. There were people coming from Chicago to come burn shit up, and a lot of them were some white anarchists. Some of them actually, because the apartment building I stayed in had Airbnbs, and some of them would stay, and they came and stayed in the Airbnbs and had to get kicked out. But once he made that statement, I still had my home state plates, so I was not driving anywhere. Shout out to my coworkers on my campaign who like helped me get groceries and sent me food, because all the places around me were boarded up. Couldn't get nothing from Target, nothing from Trader Joe's, nothing from Whole Foods. Everything boarded up. They were like, "We're not playing with y'all protesters." Sprayed Black Lives Matter on the window to let them know, "Don't come fuck up our shit." But looking back on that time, it's so crazy that there was so much energy and so much want for change. And what really changed? You know, I mean, one, there's this rumor that Trump might pardon Derek Chauvin, which God help us all if he does. And two, police are still out here being brutal to people, men, women, and children. Our laws still protect them, whether it's qualified immunity or police bills of rights in different states. Police unions are just as strong as they've always been. But at least our elected officials put on those kente cloth wraps and kneeled, you know? And at least we have Juneteenth as a holiday. We got caught up and allowed a moment in time to not become a moment in history. And I think we will all look back on that time and say, you know, we protested, we were in the streets, people were getting arrested, all that and a third. But I think besides that, we're going to look back and say, and nothing changed. And I think it's really sad that happened and we weren't able to make a movement out of it. And I also think that there are some strings of that energy when we look at the Free Palestine movement, where you see some of the same extreme people, the people who were lighting shit up and lighting up police stations because they
they put the police station by where I lived on fire, threw Molotov cocktails into it. The shit was nuts.
And I think some of those same people, because at the end of the day, what those people are doing, they're not helping. They're not making the situation better. They're making it worse. They are creating chaos. And they are making it more dangerous for the people whose lives are actually impacted by this work, because they're taking an extreme stance or doing something extreme. And it's not going to get the attention or the result that they want. And at the end of the day, they're not the ones suffering. They never caught those kids who lit up that police station. I bet you if they were Black, they would have. But those kids were not Black, and they never caught them. And I look at the Free Palestine movement. The Palestinians were very clear on wanting the VP to be the president. But there were people within that movement who would never go to the Trump protest and still are not out here protesting Trump, but were at every single rally that we did, were commenting on all of these posts saying, fuck the VP, fuck Biden. You know, I saw someone say they want Joe Biden to survive his cancer diagnosis so that way he can answer for his war crimes. And as someone from a developing nation that has been heavily impacted by the Europeans coming and pickpocketing and really stealing everything that they could except the grass on the ground. And if the grass was worth something, they would have taken that too. To sit here in America and actually think that the people of Palestine are better off with the man who wants to turn Gaza into a vacation destination than dealing with the VP or Biden, who at the end of the day, Netanyahu is racist. He wouldn't have liked Kamala anyway. So they already would have had beef, just like he didn't particularly like Obama. What was the point of all that energy of last year? Who were you trying to save? Who were you trying to help? Who were you trying to protect? What was the goal? And when I look back on 2020, it just feels very similar of like you have a bunch of people who think they know better for a group of people than they know for themselves. And I think to really tie everything together, this is that same, I wouldn't even say like the same group of lefties, but I think to the general Democratic Party and to the general public, all of these people get grouped together and it doesn't do well for the brand. And as Jesus and Mara used to say, they say the brand is strong. The brand is not strong right now. And it's because we're getting clumped in with all of these people. And some of these people don't actually care about these things like they say they do. Because if they did, they would listen. They would listen to what these people actually need. Yes, we had in 2020, it was the defund the police movement. And you had these young activists who were like, we need to defund the police. And then you would go to the neighborhoods and talk to those communities. And they're like, we want the police here. We have a crime problem. Keep the police in our neighborhood. We just want them not to kill people. That's what we want. We want them to not walk down the street and kill people. We don't want the police defunded. We have crime. I'm like, I don't understand what's not clicking for y'all. Because once people started talking about defund the police, it killed the whole movement. Because people are like, defund the police? Are you fucking insane? People want the cops around. When there's a crime committed, who am I going to call? But now you've lost people because you keep talking about defund. So now we're trying to figure out ways on campaigns to talk about it without saying we agree with defunding the police, because we don't. But then we don't want these lefties and these crazy activists coming and protesting our shit because we're in line with the police. It's like, we're not in line with the police. The police should not be putting people in chokehold over a bad or a bounce check, which is bullshit anyway. Also, if someone robs a store, or is threatening me on my way home, I would like to be able to call 911 and have someone show up. And we should be able to have both. Civil societies have both. There are police all throughout countries in Europe. And yes, they have problems. But you don't see every other day on the news a police officer choking somebody out, killing somebody, shooting somebody in a basic police stop. That's what the average person wants. So, as we talk about the brand, I just hope that over the next couple years, we can figure out our shit, figure out our messaging, figure out how the fuck we're going to do this and actually take some of this shit back, because, oh my God, we are struggling. We're struggling so bad. They gave America the Pope. They were like, you know what? Y'all need this.
we're not too worried about you guys controlling everything anymore and having an American be the head of everything. Take the Pope. You need it. You need the help. That's where we're at. A place where post-World War II was never, like, it was like a never happening. Even pre the conclave, they were looking at a guy from the Philippines. They were looking at some dude from Africa. But America is in such a crazy place. They were like, you know what? We're going to flip it and reverse it. And we're going to give y'all the Pope. We're going to help you out. Maybe having a Chicago Whites fan who's a little closer to God, a Vanderbilt guy, maybe he could pray for the Knicks, will help y'all get back on the right path. So that is my little solo episode. We will be back next week, regularly scheduled time and programming. But thank y'all so much for listening to another episode of the Twice as Good podcast. I am one of your hosts, MJ Craig. As I said at the beginning, DK is handling some business. I'm here to handle the business. So please look out for us, follow us on IG, on Twitter, check out our website, and most importantly, like and share our podcast. Leave us a review. That's how other people find us in the Apple Store and Spotify, is when people like it and then leave a review and share it with your friends and let them know that you're listening to this cool ass podcast with these two dope ass chicks who talk about politics and our favorite political TV shows, and we keep it a buck. So definitely check us out, and I am checking out from Little Rock, Arkansas, and have a great rest of your week. Bye.